सिद्धिमर्जुनस्यादौ कुर्वन्गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्ण। टुडे वी कंटिन्यू विद आवर सेकंड चैप्टर ऑफ द भगवद गीता एंड वी विल डिस्कस द लास्ट सेक्शन। दिस लास्ट सेक्शन इज फ्रॉम वर्सेस 54 टू 72। सो व्हाइल वी मूव फॉरवर्ड लेट्स लुक एट द ओवरव्यू ऑफ द सेकंड चैप्टर। सो दिस चैप्टर has a total of 5 sections. The first section deals with Arjuna's further question and eventual surrender, that is verses 1 to 10. Then Krishna systematically answers the various questions that Arjuna has raised, the various arguments that Arjuna has made against fighting. So 11 to 30, Krishna gives Atma Gyan. The soul is indestructible, therefore fight. This counters Arjuna's argument of compassion. He says, how can I kill my relatives? He says, you're not going to kill the relatives. Then 31 to 38 talks about how you should fight, because by fighting you will attain heaven or you will attain earthly rule. Either way, you will enjoy. This counters Arjuna's argument that I will not be able to enjoy. 39 to 53 takes the discussion from Karmakanda, which is attaining of Swarga, out of the discussion 31 to 37. But now it moves forward to Karma Yoga. Seek liberation. Padam gacchanti anamayam. So this counters Arjuna's argument of fear of sinful reactions. Because will you get any sinful reactions if you kill your relatives? No. If you are doing it in the mood of yoga, samatvam yoga uchyate, as we discussed yesterday, then you will not get any sinful reactions. Now, after hearing this, Arjuna will get a question. Who is this person who is a Karma Yogi like this? Tada yoga mavapsesi, Krishna has said. One who is not disturbed by anything that is heard, any promises of material enjoyment. What are the characteristics? That is the question which Arjuna asks here. And then Krishna answers, and that's the last section, the characteristic of a sthita pragya. So let's start with this. So when we look at the characteristic of a sthita pragya, Arjuna vacha sita pragyasya ka bhasha samadhistasya keshava sita dhi kim prabhasheta kim asita vrajeta kim. So sita pragyasya ka bhasha. So Arjuna has asking a question based on his own level of thinking. So Arjuna, of course, we know is a pure devotee, but in this situation he's orchestrated by Yoga Maya and he's caught up in bodily misconceptions, bodily misidentification. So at this level he's primarily thinking, should I be fighting or should I not be fighting? So he's thinking, Krishna is telling about this person who is Tada Yoga Mopsis, who is situated in Samadhi, who has attained yoga. Will such a person be fighting or not fighting? What kind of person is this? So that's why he's asking the characteristics of such a person. Generally, when we hear something from someone, especially if we are hearing in a formal setting, in a class, it is said that at the most the audience hears 20% of what the speaker speaks. And God only knows which 20% it will be. So often they hear the thing which either entirely agrees with what they are speaking or radically disagrees with what they are speaking. That's what strikes in their mind. So Krishna has spoken a lot in the verses from 11th to 53. But Arjuna is primarily concerned, should I be fighting or should I not be fighting? So of course, in 37 and 38, Krishna has clearly told Arjuna, you should fight. 37 was yoga, 37, 38 was you should fight. And if you fight, tasmad uttishta kaunte yuddhaya kritanashchaya. That was 37. Therefore, arise and fight. And 38 also was, if you fight, you will naivam papam vapsati. Tato yoga yudhyasva naivam papam vapsati. Yuddhaya yudhyasva naivam papam vapsati. But after that statement, in 37 and 38, from 39 to 53, there are several verses which talk about mostly transcendence, which talk about there is no explicit reference to fighting. So along with that, there is a verse 49, Durena Yavaram Karma, keep aside abominable work. So that avaram karma, when Krishna is talking about, he is referring to the karma kanda, because that doesn't lead to the vara of mukti, it doesn't lead to liberation. But from Arjuna's point of view, killing one's relatives, especially one's teacher and one's grandfather, that is avaram karma, that is an auspicious work. So, because in the last 15 verses, last 14 verses, Krishna has not explicitly talked about fighting. So Arjuna gets a question, this kind of person who is a yogi, does that person, will that person fight or not fight? So in that context, he asks this question, what are the characteristics? Now the question is interesting, Sita Pragyasya Ka Bhasha? What is the language of such a person? Samadhistasya Keshava. Such a person who is situated in Samadhi. Sitadhi Kim Prabhasheta. How does such a person speak? Kim Asita. How does such a person sit? And how does a person? Vrajeta Kim. How does such a person walk? Now, you know, this, if we just look at these questions from external perspective, this might seem like the questions which are asked to a Mr. Universe during a sports contest. You know, how does such a person sit? What is the style of walking of a person? What is the style of the speech of a person? So, now originally Arjuna is not interested in that sort of thing. So, this is a serious philosophical questioning going on. So, that's why these words are indicative of something deeper. So, kim bhasha, ka bhasha, kim prabhasheta. These, in this context, are not to be taken literally. So, Baldev Vidyabhushan explained that bhasha refers to bhashyate iti bhasha. So generally we use the word bhasha to refer to language. That is true. But the word bhasha has like bhashya. Bhashya is a commentary. Bhashya, like Govinda Bhashya is the commentary of Baldev Vidyabhushan and Vedanta Sutra. So bhashya is said to be a commentary, and generally tika is said to be a commentary on a commentary, a sub-commentary. So for example, Surrender Unto Me. It is like a commentary on Srila Prabhupada's commentary. So it, we could call it as a tikka, sub-commentary. Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is a bhashya. So it's a bhashya or bhasha. It doesn't only refer to language. It refers to that which describes. And generally, how do we describe a thing? With its characteristics. So here, ka bhasha refers to what is, how is this bhashya done of this particular person? What are the characteristics of a person? And then, kim prabhasheta. That is referring to what is the manner of speech of that person. And then after that, kim asita, how does such a person sit? That refers to how does the person regulate the senses and keep them under control. So sitting is a physical activity, but along with that, it refers to regulation, inactivity, self-mastery. So how does a person restrain the senses? And vrajeta kim means, it's not just walking along a fashion ramp that is being talked about over here. It's not the gait of a person. It is how a person moves around while being in the world filled with temptations, filled with sense objects. How does a person operate? The four questions. And these four questions are answered by Krishna in the next section. So, ka bhasha, what are the characteristics? What is the defining character of such a person? That is answered in the 55th verse, immediately next verse. Then, kim prabhasheta, how does such a person speak? This characteristic of speaking are answered in 56 and 57. And then, kim asita, how does such a person sit? That is answered in from 58 to 63. How does a person restrain the senses? And how does a person engage the senses? That is answered in 64 to 71. Kim vrajeta. So let's look at this one by one. Now Prabhupada explains in the purport. Prabhupada basically does not directly translate bhasha as language. He gives us the symptoms or characteristics. And then he talks about rich person symptoms, then sick person symptoms. So similarly, transcendental symptoms. Let's see what Krishna's answer is. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Prajahat Yada Kaman Sarvan Partha Manogatan Atmanyeva Atmana Tushta Ita Pragyasta Dochate. Now, we will see in this series of verses, Krishna uses various words to describe that transcendentalist. But it's all talking about the same person. So here the word Sita Pragya is used. In a future verse, Titadhirmuir Uchate will be used. So we will look at these different words. They all refer to the same person, but different attributes of that person can be understood by looking also at the description, the name that is given while referring to that person. So, Sthita Pragya. So, actually this word Sthita Pragya comes in this section of the Gita. But after this, throughout the Gita, Krishna does not use the word Sthita Prajna. So Prajna can mean, it generally means intelligence, wisdom, the faculty for deep thinking. Sthita Prajna. So that is, the intelligence is fixed, Sthita Prajna. And what are the characteristics of such a person? Two characteristics. Prajahati yada kaman. Prajahati is to give up completely. Kaman, all desires. Sarvan partha manogatan. So all these, kama, how do they originate? Manogatan. And then they are originated from the mind. Atmani evatmana tushta. Such a person is satisfied within by turning the mind inwards. Now it's interesting that normally we would think all our desire is to be happy. So if somebody gives up all desires, if a person gives up all desires, then that will also involve giving up the desire for happiness. So if we give up all desires, then how can such a person actually be happy? So that's why the important word over here is manogatan. Which kind of desires have to be given? Manogatan. Sarvan partha manogatan. Prajahati da kama. So all the kama that is originated from the mind, that they are given up. But the atma is itself joyful. And when one situates oneself at the spiritual level, then one experiences joy. So that means, if you consider our three-level reality, three levels of existence, there is the soul, which is the spiritual level, there is the mind, which is the subtle level, and we have our senses and the sense objects which exist at the gross level. So normally speaking, the soul's consciousness is rooted through the mind, outwards through the senses to the external world. And in the contact of senses and sense objects in the external world, there is sometimes some pleasure. And often there is pain also. So prajahati da kaman sarvan partha manogatan. That means the external senses that come, So external sense objects and senses which come in contact with each other, the desire for that contact and the pleasure thereof, that desire is rejected. And in that desire there can be varieties of desires. I want to do this, I want to do that. All those desires are rejected. Manogatan. But then afterwards, atmani evatmana. So what the atma, now here the word atma is used twice. Atmani evatmana tushta. So the mind, Prabhupada explained, thus purified, when it is fixed in the self, then one gets happiness. Atmani evatmana tushtaha. Tushtaha means satisfied. So the mind can either be looking outward or the mind can be looking inwards. What do we mean by the mind looking outward or inwards? As we discussed earlier, the mind is the root of consciousness. R-O-U-T-E. So the soul is the root, R-O-O-T, of consciousness. The mind is the root of consciousness. So now when this consciousness from the soul is coming outwards, at that time through the mind, it can either go outwards towards the external, but if we become introspective, that means we direct our thoughts inwards. When we direct our thoughts inwards, then we experience an inner happiness by that, because we as souls are spiritual, and as spiritual beings we are joyful. Satchitananda, ananda is a characteristic of the soul. So, the defining characteristic of Sthita Prajna, Krishna says, is that the person rejects external pleasures and rejoices in inner pleasures. Such a person is Sthita Prajna. So, Srila Prabhupada explains very simply, what is the difference between a materialist and a spiritualist? He says, materialist is one who seeks pleasure externally, and spiritualist is one who seeks pleasure internally. So, Prabhupada explains how all this applies to devotees also. Now we may say, we go to a temple, we take darshan of the deities. The deities are external to us, the temple is external to us. So when we go there, then when we do kirtan, we are hearing sound, which is coming from an external source. Some person is singing, some person is playing kartal, mridanga. So aren't all these also external pleasures? How are the internal pleasures? Actually, yes, these may seem to be like external pleasures, but they are external pleasures which take us inwards. See, there are external things in this world which can take us further outward, outward, outward. So, because if we are attracted to sense objects of this world, then those sense objects don't have any intrinsic connection with us. So that's why when we get attracted to them, we go get further lost, we get further distanced and alienated from our inner spiritual nature. But Krishna is present in our heart, but that same Krishna manifests externally through various spiritual sense objects, various divine manifestations, the deities, the holy name, the mridanga. So all these are in different ways and to different degrees manifestations of Krishna. And when we focus our consciousness on them, it may seem like we are getting some external pleasure or pleasure from an external source. But actually, the pleasure that comes is the contact of the soul and Krishna and the pleasure that comes thereof. So that same Krishna who is manifesting externally, say as the holy name, as the deity, that same Krishna is present in our heart. And when we contact Krishna externally, we awaken spiritually. And the more we become awakened spiritually, the more we can perceive and relish Krishna's presence internally. That's why the happiness that we get in devotional service, in the initial stages of our spiritual life, we need external stimuli for reminding ourselves of Krishna and for connecting with Krishna. And of course, in the advanced stages also, we still use the external manifestations. We serve those external manifestations. We go and take darshan of the deity because we love Krishna. So it's but the important point is the happiness that a devotee gets is not external. It is internal. Because it is even if there are some external factors involved, those external factors lead us inwards more and more. So in this way, a devotee turns from outer happiness to inner happiness. And this is the defining characteristic of Siddha Pragya. So the most important characteristic is, where do we seek happiness? If you're seeking happiness externally, we are materialist. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that no, this is the Siddha Pragya. Now Krishna wants Arjuna to become a Siddha Pragya like this. One who seeks happiness internally. Now, many people think of internal in a very simplistic sense. People think that, okay, whatever is inside me is internal. And whatever is outside me is external. But this is a naive idea. People say, look within and find peace. But when I look inside, I find only agitation. Now, this desire is there, this anxiety is there, this tension is there. So actually, if we think that what is inwards is spiritual and what is outwards is material, that is a simplistic understanding where we are still considering ourselves to be the body. So when I think myself to be the body, then that which is outside the body is external and that which is inside the body is internal. But actually, inside the body, there is the mind and then there is the soul. So the mental is not spiritual. What is connected with the mind is not spiritual. So when I have to understand what is internal and what is external, I have to understand with the reference point, not of the body, but with the reference point of the soul. So from the soul's point of view, the bodily and the mental, both are external. That's why the desires that come up in the mind, they may be internal to us from the body's point of view. But from the soul's point of view, they are external. That's why Krishna is telling over here, Sarvan Partha Manogatan. When I have to look for happiness, it is not just internal at the mental level. We have to look for happiness at the spiritual level. So, Atmani Evatmana Tushta. So, look at the for happiness not just internally, but in the internal at the spiritual level, not at the mental level. So, from the Bhagavad Gita's point of view, even the mental is external. The mental is not internal, although it may be internal from the body's point of view. From the soul's point of view, it is external. And so Krishna is saying, therefore, give up mental desires and turn towards Krishna and find happiness thereof. So this is the first defining characteristic. Now this is Kabhasha, the Bhashya. The defining characteristic for transcendentalist is seek happiness internally, not externally. And after that, in the next two verses, Krishna will answer the question of how does such a person speak. Let us look at that. So, dukheshu anudvigna manaha, sukheshu vigata spruha, vitaraga bhaya krodha, sitadhir muni ruchyate. Dukheshu anudvigna manaha, udvigna. Udvigna means agitated or dejected. Dukheshu. So, when there is misery, one doesn't become dejected. Sukheshu vigata spruha. In happiness, one doesn't get more desires. Let me have more. Let me have more. Vigata spruha. So, Baldev Devachan Vishwanshi Thakur, they explain this in practical sense. That, you know, if as a renunciate, somebody goes to one goes to somebody's house and that person gives a lot of opulent food to eat. So one of them become delighted by that and start showering. Oh, may you have a happy family life. May you have this. May you have that. And if somebody goes to somebody else's house and the person says, you beggar, get out of here. I'll curse you. No, it doesn't speak like this. It says, he accepts whatever comes. Dukheshu anudvigna manaha sukheshu vigatasbruha. So it's interesting in this verse. It is said that dukkha and sukha will be there. Oh, for as long as we are in material existence, we will get dukkha and sukha. But generally what happens when we get sukha, we desire more of it. So, for example, if something good happens to us, if somebody starts praising us for something, then our desire becomes, speak my glories more and more. We may not speak it directly, but we feel like that. So what happens when anything gives us happiness, that generates desires, spruha. I want this more, I want this more. Whereas, when some misery comes to us, then we feel, why is this happening? Maybe I should not be doing this. We become udvigna manaha. But such a person is a transcendentalist, is not affected by this. So now, if this is talking about speech, where is the reference to speech over here? Actually, our speech is determined by our thoughts. So, Krishna will answer the question of speech in the next verse. But Krishna tells that, first of all, we are not just talking about, Krishna doesn't talk about a spiritualist or Sita Pragya, Sita Dhimuni, as doing some this superficial changing of speech. There are some people who will just decide, speak in a very sweet and polite way. Internally they feel, I want to beat you to death. And externally, you are such a nice person. Thank you for all your help. Whatever corrections you told me, they were very good for me. I do that. So, sometimes there are some people who get so frustrated with their bosses that they keep some boxing bags in their home and they punch them and they think we are punching the face of my boss. So in the material life, there is a lot of duplicity. Internally, we feel one way about a person, but externally, we feel differently. But Krishna is telling, he will talk about how the person kim prabhashit in the next verse. But before he speaks about that, he talks about the mentality of a person. What is that mentality? That actually when happiness and distress comes, one is not unduly excited or agitated by it. So, many times we may not speak externally, but our mind is speaking internally. For example, in the morning, the alarm clock rings. Then the alarm clock is ring, it's saying, wake up. But then internally the mind is saying, go to sleep. So we are not feeling it physically, but we can all hear the mind's voice. So Krishna is telling that what is it we have to, for the transcendentalist, the mind's voice itself has changed. So, dukkheshu anudvigna manaha sukheshu gatasbruha. Then, vita raga bhaya krodha. So this raga bhaya krodha, the same line, which is here in 2.56c, will again come in 4.10. Krishna will tell over there. Vitaraga bhaya krodha manmaya mamupashutaha bahavo jnana tapasa putamad bhavam agataha. 4.10.8 comes over there. So there we will discuss it in much more detail. And Prabhupada gives a very interesting explanation of what raga bhaya krodha refer to. Here Srila Prabhupada explains that a devotee stays fixed in the spiritual path, in the path of devotional service, irrespective of what happens. Raga bhaya krodha. So, let's look at Srila Prabhupada's purport in this case. So, first of all, there is Stutadhir Munir Uchyate. So, Prabhupada explains, what is a Muni? So, first point is, the first three lines Prabhupada is explaining, what is a Muni? Muni is a person who can agitate the mind in various ways for mental speculation without coming to a factual conclusion. So, basically, Muni is a speculator. So, there are people who try to infer, this happened, what is the cause of this? So there was a fruit on a tree, and then a bird came and sat on the branch, and then the bird flew away. So now, at that time the fruit also fell off. So now some observer, the speculator starts thinking, actually, because the bird came and sat on the tree, that's why the fruit fell. Or, because the fruit fell, the bird got frightened and the bird went away. Or, the two are unrelated. Or the fruit's presence attracted the bird, but when the fruit fell, the bird got frightened and the bird went away. Or the bird came and that's why the branch couldn't hold the weight, and then when the branch was shaking, both happened. The bird got frightened and flew away, and then the fruit also fell. So, now what is the actual reality? You know, we can observe events and we can try to infer causes. But it's very difficult to find out what the cause actually is. In fact, the whole concept of causality itself is a mental construct. And that means, when I hold a glass over here and then I drop the glass, it falls and breaks. So then, I generally attribute a cause-effect connection. Okay, I let the glass loose, that's why the glass fell, and when the glass fell, it broke. So, why? What are the causes of the breaking of the glass? The cause is that the glass is brittle, and when it falls on the floor, it will break. That's fine, as far as it goes. But within a particular framework, when we can link the causes and effects, we can do that. But beyond that, in real life, there are so many multiple factors involved. So if we want to observe effects and determine causes, we can go on and ad infinitum analysis. So Rishi is a person who like that goes, sorry, Muni here, is a person who goes into a lot of speculation. This may be it, this may be it, this may be it. But Prabhupada says, Sitadhir Muni is a person who has gone beyond such speculation and has come to conclusion. What is the conclusion? Prabhupada quotes from the Sotaratna over here. It's a very beautiful verse. Bhavantam eva anucharan nirantara. So, bhavantam eva anucharan nirantara. So, in the book of Yamunacharya, this is a very famous series of verses called Sotaratna. So, he says, bhavantam, unto you, O Lord, eva anucharan nirantara. Anucharan, when I started following you, nirantara. Continuously, then what happened? Prashantani shesha manorathantaraha. So manoratha, the mind is like having a chariot and it's constantly moving at high speed. Prashantani shesha, it became calm, it became peaceful. Kadahamai kanti kanitta kinkara. When, O Lord, will I become, will I realize that I am your one-pointed servant? I kanti kankara. So kinkara is a servant. Kim karoti, what should I do? One who asks like this constantly. Such a person is called a kinkara. Kadaham aikantika nitya kinkaraha. Aikantika, one-pointed and nitya, eternal. Praharshay shami sanatha jivitam. And I'll be satisfied forever that I have got a master. And therefore I'll be satisfied. See, in this world we want many things. If I do this, if I do that, then I'll become happy. But a devotee understands that if I have my relationship with Krishna, that itself is the source of supreme happiness. I don't need anything else. So the only thing I need is to understand how wonderful is Krishna and how fortunate I am to have a relationship with Him. So, kadahamai kanti kanitya kinkara praharshayishyami sanatha jivitam. Sanatha jivitam. People in this world are anath. They have no shelter. I have got a shelter. And I'm happy with that shelter. So, that once a devotee becomes fixed, Krishna is my be all and end all, then the mind doesn't wander here and there. So Prabhupada explains, Sitadhi Muni refers to such a person. The mind has become fixed on Krishna. So the second part of the purport, there are no paragraphs over there, but Sitadhi Muni. So this is called a Muni fixed in mind. So this is talking about Sitadhi Muni. This next three sentences. Four sentences. Then after that, Prabhupada explains, how such a person is Dukkheshvanudvigna Manaha. This is talking about Dukkheshvanudvigna Manaha. How does that happen? Generally, whenever we get any trouble in life, we assume that we don't deserve it. That's our default assumption. So because of that, the question comes is, why is this happening? So generally, when we understand things from the karmic perspective, we can objectively see that there are many things, good also, which we don't deserve and we get it. Sometimes so students may feel very bad. Oh, I studied so much but I got such poor marks. But actually, students will also, if they think seriously, they'll see that there are many times when I did not study so well, but still whatever I studied came in the exam and I got some good marks also. So actually, this hand of luck or hand of destiny, whatever you call it, it works out both ways. Sometimes we get lucky breaks and sometimes we get unlucky situations. So this is how destiny, we can infer the role of destiny in our life. A devotee understands that this is ultimately because of my own past karma. And whenever suffering comes, devotee has the attitude which Brahmaji talks about in his prayers in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, that tattenukampam susamikshamano gunjaneva atmakritam vipakam. This is my own karma coming, but you have minimized it, O Lord. So when we see that, okay, my suffering is minimized, then the devotee doesn't get too agitated by misery. Dukhesho udignamana. Then after that, the next paragraph explains, sukheshu vigataspruha. So this means, when a devotee gets some comfortable situation, then the devotee stays fixed. They're thinking that, oh, Krishna has given me this comfortable situation, let me serve Krishna more and more. Doesn't become attached to that comfortable position, but continues to serve Krishna. We see this in Srila Prabhupada's life. Srila Prabhupada is an excellent example of Siddhadi Muni. You know, he had so many problems. He tried to have a business with which he could support financially his spiritual master's mission, but the business repeatedly failed. Then he started the League of Devotees, but there was a conspiracy against him, and he had to give up the land, the place where he was having that League of Devotees in Jhansi. Then he tried to run back to Godhead, but then he ran out of paper and finances. Then he tried to work with his God brothers, but the God brothers had a very constricted vision of, and they did not want him to expand the Harmonist and the other magazines that he was publishing. He did not even get basic facilities several times. Then he was living in Vrindavan and he started publishing his books. But people were not taking the message of his book seriously. Then he went to America. On the way, he got a heart attack. Finally, he reached America. But in Butler, Pennsylvania, he was treated more like a curiosity object than a spiritual teacher. Nobody was taking him seriously. Then he went to the Lower East Side, and there his tape recorder was stolen. Typewriter was ransacked. Then even after that, he went and stayed in the Bowery, and there also his own roommate, who seemed to be the most promising of all the attendants of the program, turned violent, went berserk and attacked Srila Prabhupada. So in spite of all these situations, dukkheshvanu dvignamanaha, Prabhupada kept going. And later on, when he got facilities, what did he do? He had beautiful temples all over the world. But sukheshu vigatas praha. Prabhupada did not think, I have got wonderful temples, let me just stay comfortable. He was constantly traveling and preaching. And then, vitaraga bhaya krodha. So Prabhupada says that, for a Lord's service, the devotee is always daring. He's always daring and is not influenced by attachment or aversion. So attachment means vita raga. Raga means one doesn't think, I want this, I want that. And only if I have this, I will do service. Now, whatever the situation, the devotee is ready to do service for Krishna. And bhaya. Now, Prabhupada had practically no fear at all. Otherwise, how could he have gone all alone to America? So what does how do we become fearless? Actually, fearlessness comes not just by the absence of fear, but by the awareness of a presence that dwarfs fear. Fearlessness will come just by absence of fear. Now, all of us have our fears, and we can't just wish away those fears. But fearlessness comes by the awareness of a presence that dwarfs fear. When we understand that Krishna is there and Krishna is the Supreme Being, and in front of him, whatever it is that causes misery, that is tiny. Krishna is huge and all the problems of the world are tiny. When we understand that, then we become free from fear. So Prabhupada was always in the consciousness of Krishna. And when he was in the Lower East Side, there were often snapshotters. People overtaken drugs and they had guns. And sometimes they would shoot around. But Prabhupada was fearlessly going around over there, because he knew he was with Krishna and he was traveling and preaching. And vita raga bhaya krodha. Krodha is anger. So a devotee is free from anger because a devotee understands that Krishna is in control. So when Krishna wants, the results will come. Krishna does not want, the results will not come. So Prabhupada's lack of anger, we can see here, the anger refers to more like frustration. See, when anger, when it is internalized, it becomes resentment, it becomes hatred. And it comes up in ugly ways in the future sometimes. But when that anger is expressed outward, it comes as temper tantrums, where a person may shout at others, blast at others. Srila Prabhupada, no matter how many reversals he faced in his obstacles and reversals in his preaching, he kept on going. He never got frustrated. Now we may say that Prabhupada would get angry sometimes. He would shout at devotees sometimes, especially those who were those whom he was training. So what about that? Actually, a pure devotee may get angry sometimes, but pure devotee is never controlled by anger. So Prabhupada would sometimes get angry, and for a few moments he would be angry, and after that just act as if things are going on normally. So anger would never take control of him. A devotee may use anger for training somebody else, but a devotee doesn't get controlled by anger at any time. So this is the internal thought process. And then based on this thought process, what happens? The external expression comes out. Ya sarvatranam hisnehas tattat prapya shubham shubham naminandati na dveshti tasya pragya pratishthita. Ya sarvatra na bhisnehas. So whatever one gets in this world, sarvatra, tattat prapya shubha shubham. Sometimes we'll get good, sometimes bad, sometimes auspicious, sometimes inauspicious. Na abhinandati na dveshti. Which a person doesn't praise when good comes and doesn't resent when bad comes. Which a person is pragya pratishthita. Pragya, sita, earlier sita pragya pratishthita. Same point has been talked about. So in this world, good and bad will always keep coming. So when the good and bad come, how can we just become artificially? It is not good, it is not bad. Is it that a devotee has to become blind? That whatever is happening doesn't matter. You know, is it that sometimes if a person is given anesthesia, and the person doesn't feel anything at all. So then even if the person is cut or massaged, the person doesn't feel anything. Or is it that a devotee has to devotee should desensitize themselves to everything material, so that they don't feel anything as good or bad? No, it is not like that. Devotees don't desensitize themselves to the material. They focus on sensitizing themselves to the spiritual. And when their vision is focused on the spiritual, the material is perceived, but the material doesn't dominate their perception. That means, when devotees are preaching, if you see Prabhupada, when he would preach, he would be concerned how many people are coming for the program. But his focus was not how many people were coming. You know, whether he was talking with one person in his room or whether he was addressing 10,000 people in a public program. Prabhupada would be enthusiastic to speak about Krishna always. So at the same time, he also wanted the results to come out. So he was concerned about how things were working out, things were emerging also. But a devotee is not primarily focused on that. So whether good or bad comes, a devotee is fixed because devotee considers that my service is fixed on my service for Krishna will always continue. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that in this world there are always some disturbances. There is always some upheaval in the material world, which may be good or evil. One who is not agitated by such material upheavals, who is unaffected by good and evil, is to be understood to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. So now, generally we use the word upheaval in negative terms. Upheaval means there is some agitation, some disruption. So why does Prabhupada say upheaval may be good also? How can we have good upheavals? The point is, anything that distracts us from our focus in life, that is an upheaval. So often, when we gain successes, at that time, we let our guard down. And when we let our guard down, that's the time when Maya can attack us. So if the good also distracts us from our focus, then that can become bad. So one should not be disturbed by the good also. On the 13th day of the battle in Kurukshetra, the 10th day Bhishma fell, 11th day Drona became the commander, and 11th and 12th, Drona exhibited tremendous prowess. And on the 12th day, Abhimanyu was killed through the Chakravyuh. 13th day, Arjuna vowed to take revenge. And throughout the day, Arjuna strode tirelessly and fearlessly, breaking into the ranks of the Kaurava forces. But as a last-ditch effort, Duryodhana got not 6 but 8 Maharathas to surround Jayadrath from all sides. And when he was surrounded on all sides, then Arjuna was so close yet so far. It was almost like a cloud of arrows was coming, and Arjuna couldn't move at all forward. He could just barely maintain his position. And the sun was sinking rapidly towards the western horizon. And as Arjuna became concerned, so Krishna used the Sudarshan Chakra to cover the sun. And as soon as the sun got covered, the Kauravas erupted in joy. And as they erupted in joy, Arjuna became perplexed and started lowering his bow. So Krishna urgently told him, "Arjuna, keep your bow ready. There is still time." And then he told him, "Use the Brahmastra and shoot in such a way that Jayadrath becomes killed." And Jayadrath is protected by a bow. So shoot the arrow in such a way that the head, when it is cut, it will go and fall in the lap of Rudakshetra. Rudakshetra is his father, and he is doing austerity in Samant Panchak. So then Krishna, as per Krishna's instruction, Arjuna took the bow. Arjuna did not ask any questions. And as he was about to shoot the bow, Krishna removed the Sudarshan Chakra and said, "There is the sun and there is Jayadrath sector. Shoot." And he shot. And as the Kauravas were observing, the Kauravas were erupted in joy. And the Kauravas were jeering Arjuna. He says, "Arjuna, what is this? You're lost." And then Jayadrath, who had been hiding, trembling like a leaf in a storm, he came out. He says, "Arjuna, I will set a funeral pyre for you. Now you can burn in the fire." And as they were jeering and cheering like this, suddenly right in front of them, they saw the arrow, they saw the sun, and they saw the arrow shooting and lopping off the head of Jayadrath. And that head of Jayadrath just flew into Udakshatra's lap. Udakshatra had asked a blessing that anybody who causes the head of my son to fall on the ground, that person's head should get shattered. So Krishna knew that vow. So Arjuna arranged the arrow in such a way that the arrow fell on the lap of Rudakshetra, and Rudakshetra was in meditation. He opened his eyes, saw blood and skull, and got up and shook off the skull. And as the skull fell on the ground, his own skull, by his own bow, boom, it just exploded. So this is how Krishna protected Arjuna. That's what we normally tell the story for. But another moral of the story is that the Pandavas, the Kauravas, became distracted by pleasure. They thought they have won the war, and because of that they let their guard down. And when they let their guard down, tack, Arjuna and Krishna seize that opportunity. So even pleasure can be an upheaval if it makes us lose our focus. So Prabhupada says that one should not be disturbed either by pleasure or by pain. One who is fixed in Krishna consciousness is not affected by good and evil, because he is simply concerned with Krishna, who is all good absolute. A devotee understands that whatever Krishna is arranging to do, that is for my ultimate good. That's why a devotee doesn't give too much credence, doesn't get too much disturbed by the ups and downs of the world. Yada samharate chayam kurmo angani sarvashah indriyan indriyarthebhyas tasya prajna pratishthita. So, now Krishna describes the next verse. He's starting to describe how such a person sits. Kim asita. So, yada samharate cha ayam, cha ayam, this. Samharate means to draw in or to make inwards. Kurmo anganiva sarvashaha. Kurma is a tortoise. Anganiva, all its limbs, it draws inwards. So, similarly, indriyan, indriyarthebhyas. The senses, one draws away from the sense objects. Tasya prajna pratishthita. So again, the same word is used, the prajna pratishthita. Who is a prajna pratishthita? That person who can draw in the senses. Just as the tortoise draws in its limbs. So here, the emphasis is primarily on the practice of devotional service. But Krishna has not yet talked about himself. So he begins that by talking about how we have to withdraw ourselves from the material. So in the 54th verse was the question, and in the 55th verse, when Arjuna was given the answer, the characteristic was that a person is detached from the external and rejoicing in the internal. So how does one detach oneself from the external? That is described in this verse. And the description begins in this verse. So a tortoise has its limbs which are vulnerable, but its shell is almost impenetrable. Shell is so powerful that sometimes even an elephant's foot also, if it pounces, the shell can resist that. So if the tortoise limbs are withdrawn,
then the tortoise cannot be attacked by any predators. Similarly, we have our senses. Our senses are our weak points. Now, whenever a war is going on, at that time the enemy is always looking for the weak points. So for example, you know, if a cricket match is going on and the bowler knows, now, this batsman cannot handle short pitch balls. So what they will do is, they will exactly bowl the kind of balls that the batsman cannot bat. And the batsman struggles, and whatever is the weak point, the enemy will always try to catch the weak point. So in boxing also they say that the strategy is hit where it hurts. So when the boxers throw there some experimental punches, and then say a punch hits one part of the jaw, and when that hits the jaw, the other boxer winces. Oh, that person got some wound there earlier, some weaknesses there, so let me hit there only. So hit where it hurts. When you hit it, then the person can be brought down quickly. So in our situation in the material world, our senses are our weak points. They are where we are vulnerable. Because from the senses, we perceive the external world, and when we perceive the sense object that are there in the external world, parading around everywhere, we get caught. And we get caught, we get dragged down. So, when we understand that our senses are our weaknesses, then we have to guard our weaknesses. So, we have to, if we keep ourselves exposed, then naturally we'll be knocked down. So, the senses have to be withdrawn inwards. Now, we'll discuss more detail in the process of Ashtanga Yoga. There's a fifth stage called Pratyahar, where one draws the senses inwards completely. That Krishna will talk later. But here he is giving the general principle that we withdraw our senses. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that a yogi is one who can control the senses according to a plan. So that means we can't withdraw our senses round the clock. We have to engage the senses also. But there's a plan when to engage the senses, when not to engage the senses. For example, say with respect to speaking. A devotee speaks about Krishna. When there are other topics to talk about, a devotee may not talk about those topics so much. Because if that's not relevant to the service of Krishna, then better to avoid talking. Similarly, seeing, there is so much to see in this world, and everybody is trying to catch our eyes. Especially the whole media industry is trying to catch our eyes. So a devotee understands that there is no need for me to let my eyes wander around. If we see a radar, radar is always scanning the horizon, looking, is there some danger? So, actually speaking, our eyes are also scanning the horizon constantly. Our senses are scanning the horizon, but because our intelligence is a little perverted right now, so we are on the lookout for danger, but we consider the danger to be a welcomeable object. So instead, we are like enemy seeking radars, but when the enemy comes along, rather than running away or driving away the enemy, we welcome and embrace the enemy. So what we do is, we don't have to act like radars, looking, scanning the horizon. We have to look inwards. So samharte chayam kurmongani visarvasha. So we draw our senses inwards, and that's how we protect ourselves from being entangled with sense objects. So, you know, there is weariness and there is wariness. Weariness means exhaustion, tired. And wariness means caution, to be on the guard. So, if we just let ourselves get caught by the parade of sense objects that is there, then over a period of time we get de-energized, we get tired. Why? Because there are so many desires. I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this. And then along with that, every desire acts like creates a pang in the heart. It's like a needle which pinches us, because we know, no, I won't be able to get this, I won't be able to get this, I won't be able to get this, I won't be able to get this. So this constant conflict internally between wanting something and knowing that we can't get it. There is always going to be an unscalable gap between our fantasies and our finances. You know, what all we want to get and what all we can get. This is the unscalable gap. And the more we prey on the sense objects, the more we dwell on them, the more this gap increases. The whole advertising industry, what does it do? It fuels our fantasies more and more and more. And no matter how much we have, there will always be so much more to want. Because that's how the advertising industry works. So, what happens when there is this conflict between the fantasies and the finances? Oh,
then I want this, I can't get it. So then, there, because of that, the inner conflict de-energizes us, it frustrates us, and we become weary. Even if there are a few people who say, I don't have any financial problem, whatever I want, I can get it. It's not possible. Because then there's the limitation of the body. No matter how much money I have, still I have physical limitations. I cannot get everything that I want. The body has its limitations. We have various limitations. So when we let our senses dwell on the sense objects, then the resulting conflict makes us weary. So if we don't want to become weary, we have to be wary. Wary means cautious. Look around. If I don't have any business, let me not look in other directions. Why do I have to look around at things which I am not going to indulge in? So what should we do with our senses? That Krishna will talk in later verse. Prabhupada explains in the purport right now itself, how a devotee engages senses in Krishna's service. But the point is, if we want to avoid, we want to minimize weariness, then we have to maximize our wariness. Wariness means caution. Do I need to look at these things? Do I need to think about these things? If I don't need to, then let me not do it. Sometimes, when we are practicing devotional service, we think that the way I can test my spiritual advancement is, I will expose myself to sense objects, and when nothing happens, then I'm an advanced devotee. Now, that is not the way we are expected to test our spiritual advancement. The way we test our spiritual advancement is by checking our dedication to Krishna's service, increasing our sacrifice and our commitment in Krishna's service. Exposing ourselves to sense objects is suicidal. Even if nothing happens, something still happens. What does that mean? Even if we don't get provoked externally, but still internally, when we expose ourselves to sense objects, impressions are created. And those impressions will trouble us in future. So as much as possible, we try to avoid the exposure. That's like if a tiger is sleeping. If somebody says, you know, is this tiger dead or is it sleeping? I'll just pinch it and find out. Well, if I pinch a tiger, then afterward, the tiger will not just pinch me. The tiger, if it wakes up, it will devour me. So if, we should not make mistake hibernation for termination. When a tiger is sleeping, let it sleep peacefully. And, you know, so like that we have our lust, we have our greed. And sometimes we might have been very agitated by certain things, but now we feel, now I get exposed, I don't get agitated. We shouldn't think that lust is sleeping. Lust has died. Lust is simply sleeping right now. So, if we let it sleep and keep practicing devotional service, in its sleep only, gradually it will die. But if we try to pinch and see what happens, then there can be disaster. So devotee doesn't expose oneself to sense objects. You know, even we see, even Haridas Thakur was so absorbed in the holy name. But Haridas Thakur also did not go to the prostitute. He did not think, I will go to the prostitute and I'll show the world nothing happens to me. And the prostitute came, Haridas Thakur just continued his devotional service. So we shouldn't expose ourselves to sense objects unnecessarily. Of course, in our culture, there is so much exposure that is unavoidable. That's why along with avoiding the exposure or minimizing the exposure, we also have to have positive engagement, which will keep us absorbed in Krishna. Krishna will talk about that in the next verses. But here he says that first of all, minimize. Just like a tortoise withdraws, similarly withdraw from external exposure to sense objects. In the next verse he says, but this alone is not enough. Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehinah rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. So, vishaya vinivartante. Vishaya is sense object. Vinivartante means to draw away from, to stay away from. Niraharasya dehinah. So, generally we use the word ahar for food. But for the conditioned soul, the sense objects are like the food. And when one doesn't get the sense objects, one feels as if I am not getting any ahar. I am not getting any food at all. So, if we are fasting, you know what happens? We feel agitated. We feel, I want food. So, like that, the eyes are hungry. I want to see something. The ears are hungry. I want to hear something. Like that, all the senses are hungry. It's like the ahar for them. But this ahar is actually not an essential ahar. Many times, we mistake the irresistible to be essential. But the irresistible is not necessarily essential. What is the difference between the two? For an alcoholic, thinks that alcohol is irresistible. Yes, for the addict at that particular time, the alcohol may seem irresistible. But just because something is irresistible doesn't make it essential. Essential is that without which we can't survive. So food, water, these are things without which we can't survive. Sleep, we need all these for our survival. But nobody needs alcohol for survival. Although one may subjectively feel that we need it. So there is a difference between a subjective feeling of necessity and the objective fact of necessity. So most of the times we fail in our struggle with the sense objects because we mistake the subjective feeling of necessity to be the objective fact of necessity. So when a person gets overwhelmed by lust, at that time one feels that I need this, but actually one doesn't need it. So as long as the alcoholic is in the state of addiction, that alcoholic feels, I need alcohol. But when the alcoholic takes therapy and gets cured, at that time they understand, I don't need alcohol. Similarly, what seems irresistible to us when we are in the mode of passion, ignorance, as we come to the mode of goodness and move towards transcendence, we realize, I don't need this. That's how we become purified from that craving, from that necessity, feeling of necessity. However, here Krishna is talking about a person who is feeling this is niraharasya. Oh, I cannot live without this. Niraharasya dehina. Rasavarjam. One has stopped indulging in it, but still rasopyasya. One feels, I need it. I can't live without rasopyasya. And what is the solution to that? Param drishtvani vartate. Only when a person gets a higher taste. Now, this is a very interesting concept. Because Srila Prabhupada's standard translation is higher taste. And that is what, we also have a book by the name Higher Taste, which talks about prasadam. But if we see what Krishna is using the word over here is interesting, it is drishtva. So, param is higher or transcendental or spiritual. Now, drishtva is with respect to speech. Sorry, it's with respect to vision. It's not with respect to taste. Drishti is sight and drishtva is vision. So, param drishtva nivartate. Nivartate means the verse started with vinivartante. One gives it up, but one still wants it. But nivartate means one gives it up and one no longer wants it. So, param drishtva would literally refer to as a higher vision, a higher perception. So, why does Prabhupada translate it as a higher taste? Actually, the experience of spiritual happiness is atindriyam. Described in the Samadhi verse in the 6th chapter, 6.20-23, that actually the happiness sukham atyantikam yattad buddhi grahayam atindriyam. The ultimate happiness, sukham atyantikam yattad buddhi grahayam. It is pursued through consciousness, through the intelligence. And atindriyam, it is beyond the senses. So the happiness of Krishna consciousness is actually entirely beyond the senses. It is a transcendental happiness. So, that transcendental happiness, is it pursued through the senses? Yes, the senses can be gateways. We may take prasadam, we may take darshan of the deities, we may sing the holy names. So, the senses may be the gateways sometimes for the pleasure, for the happiness, but the senses are not the primary source. The source of the happiness is ultimately Krishna. And the experience of Krishna is not just sensory, it is transsensory. It is actually a spiritual experience. The experience may be initiated by the chanting of the holy names, but the experience culminates in the contact of the soul with Krishna. So, Prabhupada is giving us a pointer, an indicator towards this transsensory aspect of the higher taste, of the remembrance of Krishna, when he says that higher taste. So, we understand that higher taste is not something which we just taste with our tongue. And this higher param drishtva, it's not just something which we perceive with our eyes. It's actually experiential. We may experience with our eyes, we may experience with our tongue, or we may experience deep in the deepest core of our heart, without using any senses also. Either way, it's an experience of the heart. It's a higher, richer experience. Now, Krishna in this verse does not explicitly tell what is that experience. That he will tell as the Bhagavad Gita flows. He gives one hint of that in 2.61. But here it is a general principle that only when we experience a higher happiness, then we can become peaceful. Otherwise, if we try to restrain ourselves, it will just be self-torture. No matter how much we try, we will simply feel as if we are torturing ourselves. So many people feel that giving up material pleasure is deprivation. And in fact, there are some people, especially in modern times, and there have been throughout history, who consider, for example, that celibacy is extremely unnatural. Because they say it's natural for the person to enjoy the senses, and to deprive oneself is unnatural. They feel it is even undesirable. But that all comes because people don't experience a higher happiness. Now, it is true that if a person is deprived of pleasure, then the person can get some psychosis, so can get some mental problems. But we will also see that there are so many people who indulge in the pleasure and they also get problems. No, there are people who are engaging in sense gratification, and there is a whole field of sexology. You know, there are experts who give advice on sex relations, sex and relationships, and how to have better sex. And still, there are so many people who are depressed by all that. So, whether a person is indulging or denying, there are problems at the material level. Ultimately, one has to rise to the spiritual level of consciousness. Of course, if one is restraining instead of indulging indiscriminately, one will have lesser problems. But if that restraint is without a higher taste, it is based on a constant struggle of self-repression, then that can come off in ugly purpose, ugly ways also later. The important point is, the restraint is the beginning. It should not be the end. We say no to the negative so that we can say yes to the positive. If you are only saying no to the negative without experiencing any positive, then definitely it's self-torture. So Krishna recommends in the previous verse 58, say no to the negative, withdraw the senses. But immediately he says, if you want to be stable, then we have to say yes to the positive. The same thing Krishna continues in the next verse, where he says that one is under great danger if one doesn't have the positive. That we will discuss in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.